morning, and what a beautiful morning it is. The autumn is in the air here, and the sky is clear and crisp. I really love fall. So, on a beautiful day, let's talk about God. I got an email in response to my show last week, actually the last 2 weeks, on the question of how does God speak to us? It's from a woman who asked, does God speak to us in dreams? I had a dream a while ago that was very powerful. And I think it was from God. Here it is. I'm in a cabin in the woods. I have the feeling that someone important is coming. You know, just that sense of anticipation, right? You've had those, I'm sure most all of it, those kind of heightened dreams. I go outside, and there's a crowd of people. It seems as if they are waiting also. Then a spiritual-looking man comes to me and says, he's coming now. Suddenly, I'm surrounded by just white light, beautiful. And my heart begins to expand. And I'm somehow holding a note that says, my darling has come. And the word darling is capitalized. This heart expansion, I guess in anticipation of whatever is coming, feels both wonderful and yet painful. Then I wake up. What do you think it means? Wow. You know, I confess I've had some heart expanding or expansive dreams. I don't remember any visualization as a part of it. And I've talked with others over the years, parishioners and others, who have described to me heart expansive dreams. I mean, your heart's kind of just expanding. It's wonderful, but it can be kind of a little painful. What does it mean? Well, when God comes back, it's according to the Bible, the end of Revelation, it's going to be as our beloved, as our bridegroom, so to speak, as our darling. So one meaning of the dream could be that, I'm speaking to this woman, if she's listening, it could be that your soul or spirit has been given a sense by God to prepare you for what is eventually going to arrive in your life. In other words, this could be a dream about your destiny. And that's one of the ways God does speak to us. And dreams can definitely be from God. God speaks to us in sleeping dreams and also in visions, which can happen both when we are awake and we are asleep. They're pretty uncommon in our own lives. I mean, I've had some, maybe I'll share if there's time today, but wow, how many nights have I slept in my many years? You know, it's not something that happens very often. A little side note here. There are five stages of sleep, and the typical person will go through all five stages every 90 minutes, roughly 90 minutes. So sometimes if you wake up out of rhythm, you know, let's say you wake up and you fall back asleep and you sleep for 30 minutes and wake up and you feel almost worse than you did before you had the nap. Think of a diver diving, you know, deep and then coming back to the surface in a rhythm every 90 minutes. Well, by the way, if you are awakened at any of these five stages, you will report what you're thinking. That is to say, the brain never sleeps. The research is clear that while we're sleeping, we're processing, we're learning, we're making modifications, adaptations. And the third stage is rapid eye movement, REM sleep. And it is when we are in REM sleep that we have our sleeping dreams. So the dreams that we're going to talk about this morning take place during that specific period. We could spend the whole time attempting to talk about dream interpretation, and what dreams mean, and they can mean different kinds of things. And obviously, if there are some from God, there are obviously many dreams that are simply our own inner psychic working things out. And there can be dreams that scare us and dreams from the dark side and all that. I don't want to get into that kind of stuff. We don't need to worry much here about that. I want to focus rather on God dreams in the context that he who is in us is greater than he who is in the world. Let me tell you a story. Since there can be more than one meaning to a dream. I love this old Yiddish Jewish tale. It takes place, the story goes, in Eastern Europe, maybe, 200 years ago. So here it is. A woman has a powerful dream. She wakes up and she seeks out her rabbi. She says, "Rabbi, I had a dream last night." And the rabbi says, "So tell me what it was, and I'll tell you what it meant." And so she tells him the dream. And he gives her an interpretation of what the dream meant. So she's going back home, reflecting on this, and here comes a carriage with a rabbi who's more prestigious from a larger nearby village. She can't help herself. She stops the carriage, and she says, "Rabbi, forgive me for disturbing you, but I had this dream." So the rabbi says, "Okay, tell me what it was, and I'll tell you what it meant." And so she tells him the dream, and he gives her a second, entirely different interpretation. Well, this gets her all confused, of course. So then she decides, "I'm going to go to the most prestigious, respected rabbi in the whole country, in the largest city, perhaps Krakow." So she makes an appointment. Finally gets to this rabbi. She says, "Rabbi, I had this dream that really is significant. I don't know really what it means." And he says, "So tell me what it was, and I will tell you what it meant." And so she tells him the dream. And he gives her a third, an entirely different interpretation, which just, what am I going to believe here? So she says, "Rabbi, I'm so confused." And she tells him the other two interpretations. And his answer, that's simple. They are all true. And we may not like that. But it means that dreams can have more than one meaning. So I've had some dreams that had a meaning then, but over the years, the meaning of the dream seems to have modified as I've matured, as I have greater insight into just what was going on. Dreams are significant in the Bible. And they're often an overlooked form of communication by God. But the Bible, the Word of God, consistently reveals God speaking to people through this universally experienced, albeit mysterious, phenomena called dreams. I bet all of us have had interesting dreams. It's a fun thing to talk about. Let me look for a few minutes now at some of the significant biblical dreams, examples. First couple from Genesis. And this first one is from Genesis 15, a dream that Abraham, who was then called Abram, before God gave him the other section of his name, had that reiterated the covenant that God was making with him and with all of Israel, really for the Jewish people in history. As I speak this, what fascinates me is I have this clear sense and have had for many years when I read it in seminary for the first time, that, wow, this dream is, clearly nearly 4,000 years old. And yet, you can sort of get into what it looked like, what it felt like. Here it is. Because as the sun was going down from Genesis 15, a deep sleep fell on Abram, and a deep and terrifying darkness descended upon him. Then the Lord said to Abram, "Know this for certain, that your offspring shall be aliens in a land that is not theirs, and shall be slaves there, and they shall be oppressed for 400 years, but I will bring judgment on the nation that they serve, and afterward they shall come out with great possessions. As for yourself, you shall go to your ancestors in peace. You shall be buried in a good old age, and they shall come back here in the fourth generation. For the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete." Whenever that, don't worry about what that means. Here's the, for me, the most fascinating part. When the sun had gone down and it was dark, a smoking fire pot and a flaming torch passed between these pieces. Pieces of God asked Abraham to cut up a lamb and put the sections of the lamb, so God's passing through this. And there are other meanings I'm not even going to address at this point. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, "To your descendants I give this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates." And then he goes and specifies the land that God is giving to Abraham. This is one of those sacred dreams. And then two generations later, Jacob had an incredible dream in Genesis 29. Jacob left Beersheba and went to Haran. He came to a certain place and stayed there for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head. Oh, that doesn't sound very comforting, does it? And lay down in that place. And he dreamed that there was a ladder set up on the earth, the top of it reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And the Lord stood beside him and said, "I am the Lord, the God of Abraham your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and to your offspring. And your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth. And you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And all the families of the earth shall be blessed in you and in your offspring. Know that I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you." Then Jacob woke from his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." And he was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place! There is none other than, or this is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven." So Jacob rose early in the morning, and he took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up for a pillar and poured oil on top of it. He called that place Bethel, but the name of the city was Luz at first. Bethel is a haven or a home or a place of God. Became kind of a temple or a sanctuary. Well, these are just two examples. There are several others in Genesis and elsewhere. And after a short break to listen to the weather, I'll share some more, and then we'll begin to look at what do these dreams represent then and now. Okay, we are back. Another great dream was the dream of Joseph. Joseph, those of you remember, one of the 12 sons of Jacob, he had a number of dreams, both himself and then he worked for the Pharaoh, and it's a long story, but dreams are very significant in that section of Genesis. The first one that Joseph had, once Joseph, this is from Genesis 37, had a dream and he told it to his brothers. They hated him even more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream that I dreamed. There we were binding sheaves in the field. Suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright. Then your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf." His brother said to him, "Are you indeed to reign over us?" Which, of course, he does later. This is a dream about destiny. "Are you indeed to have dominion over us?" So they hated him even more because of his dream and his words. And he has other dreams similarly. Then in another extraordinarily important dream, Solomon, of course, reigns after King David. And many of us are familiar with the wisdom Solomon was reported to have had and so forth. Well, here's a dream reported in 1 Kings 3 that is, it's also extraordinary about who Solomon was going to be, God's destiny for him. But in response to his request, his answer actually to God's request. Here it is. "At Gideon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night. And God said, 'Ask what I should give you.' And Solomon said, 'You have shown great and steadfast love to your servant, my father David, because he walked before you in faithfulness in righteousness and in uprightness of heart toward you. You've kept for him this great and steadfast love and have given him a son to sit on his throne today. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David. Although I'm only a child, I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of the people whom you have chosen, a great people, so numerous they cannot be numbered or counted. Here it is now. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, able to discern between good and evil. For who can govern this, your great people? It pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this. God said to him, because you have asked this, and have not asked for yourself long life or riches or for the life of your enemies, but have asked for your understanding to discern what is right, I now do according to your word. Indeed, I give you a wise and discerning mind. No one like you has been before you, and no one like you shall rise after you. I give you also what you have not asked, both riches and honor all your life. No other king shall compare with you. If you will walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your life. Then Solomon awoke. It had been a dream. He came to Jerusalem, where he stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. He offered up burnt offerings and offerings of well-being, and provided a feast for all his servants. And of course, he went on to live an extraordinary life, having everything he wanted, and ultimately Ecclesiastes, that he wrote late in his life, he recognized it was all vanity, vanity, that what matters most is serving God. The next one I want to share is from Acts, the New Testament, Acts 10. Of course, Pilate's wife in Matthew had a dream warning Pilate to free Jesus, and just before Pilate ultimately says yes to the Jewish authorities and condemns Jesus to crucifixion, the message is passed. I think it's Matthew 27. Free this man! She was warned in a dream. So that's one of the functions of dreams biblically. There are other instances that God warns us. But the dream on report is the dream that, actually a vision, but visions and dreams are very connected biblically. Whether you're fully awake or asleep, it's the same kind of operation that's going on. God is in control. God is giving you a message, a visualization, and so forth. But before I share this, I want to tell you a quick story. Back in 1972, before I was going to become a pastor, I had like 2 weeks to prepare. I was teaching psychology at Iowa Wesleyan College, and I was going to go in the ministry, and I received a student appointment even before I went to seminary. So my wife and our young son and I moved from Mount Pleasant, Iowa to Footville, Wisconsin for this 2-point charge close to Janesville, Wisconsin. And then later that year in August went to seminary on Northwestern University's campus at Garrett Evangelical Theological Seminary, United Methodist Seminary. Well, I spent about 4 years teaching college, but now I was going to preach, and I was really nervous. You know, I did. What was I going to preach about? Lord, what should I preach about? So I just hemmed and hawed. And one day I walked into my study, and I have a Jerusalem Bible that I always close. I've got a thing about leaving books open, okay? It has its own sheath, so I would always put it away carefully. Well, I walked into my study, and no one but me went in that study, and the Bible was opened. And it was opened to Acts 10. And when I read what I'm going to read to you, it, boom, opened up what would be my first sermon called The Meaning of Meeting, and what actually would open up into my first book and so many other things. So here was an example. It was not a dream in which, frankly, it was one of those little those little acts of God, which, as I talked about last time, it could be a natural event. I mean, the Bible being open, right? That's not a miracle, but it's where it was open to and when it was open that made all the difference, so that I had the sense that God was speaking to me. Okay, what this story is about the very first time that the Holy Spirit leaves the Jewish people into the Gentile world. This is the moment when you could say that the Jewish, what was initially a Jewish sect, would become a world religion in Christianity. In Caesarea, there was a man named Cornelius, a centurion of the Italian cohort. So he was a Roman centurion, captain, as it was called. He was a devout man who feared God. He was a God-fearer. There were many Gentiles who really believed in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but they remained Gentile. But they were very supportive of the Jewish community. Devout man, he feared God while of his household. He gave alms generously to the people and prayed constantly to God. One afternoon, about 3 o'clock, he had a vision in which he clearly saw an angel of God coming in and saying to him, "Cornelius." He stared at him in terror and said, "What is it, Lord?" He said, "Your prayers and your alms have ascended as a memorial before God. Now send men to Joppa for a certain Simon who was called Peter. He's lodging with Simeon, a tanner whose house is by the seaside." When the angel who spoke to him had left, he called two of his slaves and a devout soldier from the ranks of those who served him, and after telling them everything, he sent them to Joppa. Now here it is. About noon the next day, as they were on their journey and approaching the city, Peter went up to the roof to pray. He became hungry and wanted something to eat. And while he was being prepared, he fell into a trance. So he kind of had a sleeping trance vision. He saw the heaven opened and something like a large sheet coming down, being lowered to the ground by its four corners. In it were all kinds of four-footed creatures and reptiles and birds of the air. Then he heard a voice saying, "Get up, Peter, kill and eat." But Peter said, "By no means, Lord, for I have never eaten anything that is profane or unclean." So these were unclean animals in Jewish kosher laws. The voice said to him again a second time, "What the Lord has made clean, you must not call profane." This happened three times, and the thing was suddenly taken up to heaven. Now, while Peter was greatly puzzled about what to make of the vision he had seen, suddenly the men sent by Cornelius appeared. They were asking for Simeon's house and were standing by the gate. They called out to ask whether Simon, who was called Peter, was staying there. While Peter was still thinking about the vision, the Spirit said to him, "Look, three men are searching for you. Now get up, go down, and go with them without hesitation, for I have sent them." So what happens is Peter goes with the men to Cornelius' home, and as he is telling Cornelius the gospel of Jesus Christ, Cornelius and his whole family, they're just baptized by the Holy Spirit. So my sermon was titled "The Meaning of Meeting," and the basic idea was when we reveal ourselves to each other, God reveals himself to us. This whole idea of this centrality, the importance of meeting directly with one another so that the spirit field of God can manifest itself. Anyway, so our time is getting short. There are different kinds of dreams. God can warn us in dreams, can confirm things that are good or what not good for us. He can be prophetic in our dreams, as I've already shared. And God says through Amos, and that's repeated in the New Testament, that old men shall dream dreams and young men and women shall have visions, that this is going to be an ongoing reality. God speaks to us in dreams. Now, one of the ways to find this, where did I put it? Yeah, okay. How do we know that a word, or in this case a dream, is from God? And I've had some of the, if there were time, I would share some. It has these elements. A dream is going to have us. For me, there's an otherness. It's amped up. It's a dream on steroids. It's clear and distinct. Maybe not, as the dreamer reported, it's novel, it's unexpected. You do not forget it. So the I've had some dreams from God that I will never forget. They're vivid. Its impact does not diminish over time. It stays with you. And it gathers you toward wholeness. There's mercy, there's grace, even judgment in a good sense, that clears you from doing the wrong thing toward doing the right. It's what you need to hear, even if you didn't realize that you needed to hear it. It's what God wanted you to hear. Ultimately, it strengthens you, and it fires up your heart. So what do you do if you believe you've had a religious dream? Well, some experts say, you know, first, and which makes sense, pray. Okay, write it down. Write it down. I've told this to people over the years who have had religious dreams where they felt maybe God was communicating something to them. Write it down. Get a notebook. And then pray about it. And after praying, you feel the dream isn't of God, forget about it, or see if you can forget about it. But if you think God is in it, what is it that God seems to be saying to you? Take a moment to, over time, listen to God. Sit quietly. Lord, what are you saying to me? You got to seek peace. God will give you peace as you have a sense as to what that dream, an assurance as to what that dream may really be about. It's always wise to share it. Seek godly counsel. As I told the story of the woman going to her rabbi. That's why I've had persons, when I was in the pastorate, come to me and tell me about dreams that they had a sense it was from God. And we find that biblically, like the Pharaoh seeking Joseph's counsel, Daniel being sought later. What could it mean? And then just kind of let it be. You don't have to, as I shared, dreams can have various meanings, and the meaning can change over time. The Lord will bring his dream to your remembrance. It'll come back. So one of the very first religious dreams I had, I was taking a nap. My sister and I, this was just during the Christmas vacation, 1967, and we were talking about God and things that happened to both of us. And so I would take naps during the day because we'd be up to 2, 3 in the morning or so. And she came in to, I was just waking up in the living room on the couch, and she walked in, and I remember looking at her saying, "Hi, Fran, you know, I'll be right there. I'm just waking up." And then I turned back, and it was like a split screen, and here was Jesus. I mean, it was Jesus in this dream, and I was chained to him with these large chains. I'll never forget it, which would ultimately be true for my whole life, that I'm in this, like a Paul, chained to Christ, and it's the best thing possible, okay, that our lives are chosen by God. But anyway, when I woke up, I looked at my sister, and she was looking at me funny. I said, "What, friend?" She said, "Do you know what you were saying?" I said, "Wasn't I saying I was going to wake up?" "No, you kept saying the force of God upon us." Dreams are wonderful realities from God, but don't just keep them to yourself. Share them. If you would like to hear this show, I'll be putting it on my website later this morning at drhalgreen.com, drhalgreen.com. Or if you've got some questions or things you'd like me to talk about, please write me at drhalgreen@gmail.com, drhalgreen@gmail.com. Have great dreams and know when they're of God and from God. They're going to lift your spirit and put you in a better place. God bless you.